Now, Naomi had a relative of her husband, a worthy man of the clan of Elimelech, whose name was Boaz. And Ruth the Moabite said to Naomi, "Let me go to the field and glean among the ears of grain after him in whose sight I shall find favor." And she said to her, "Go, my daughter." So she set out and went and gleaned in the field after the reapers. And she happened to come to the part of the field belonging to Boaz, who was of the clan of Elimelech. And behold, Boaz came from Bethlehem, and he said to the reapers, "The Lord be with you." And they answered, "The Lord bless you." Then Boaz said to his young man, who was in charge of the reapers, "Whose young woman is this?" And the servant who was in charge of the reapers answered, "She is the young Moabite woman who came back with Naomi from the country of Moab. She said, 'Please let me glean and gather among the sheaves after the reapers.' So she came, and she has continued from early morning until now, except for a short rest." Then Boaz said to Ruth, "Now, listen, my daughter. Do not go to glean in another field or leave this one, but keep close to my young women. Let your eyes be on the field that they are reaping, and go after them. Have I not charged the young men not to touch you? And when you are thirsty, go to the vessels and drink what the young men have drawn." Then she fell on her face, bowing to the ground, and said to him, "Why have I found favor in your eyes that you should take notice of me, since I am a foreigner?" But Boaz answered her, "All that you have done for your mother-in-law since the death of your husband has been fully told to me, and how you left your father and mother and your native land and came to a people that you did not know before. The Lord repay you for what you have done, and a full reward be given you by the Lord, the God of Israel, under whose wings you have come to take refuge." Then she said, "I have found favor in your eyes, my Lord, for you have comforted me and spoken kindly to your servant, though I am not one of your servants." And at mealtime, Boaz said to her, "Come here and eat some bread and dip your morsel in the wine." So she sat beside the reapers, and he passed to her roasted grain. And she ate until she was satisfied, and she had some left over. When she rose to glean, Boaz instructed his young men, saying, "Let her glean even among the sheaves, and do not reproach her. And also pull out some from the bundles for her, and leave it for her to glean, and do not rebuke her." So she gleaned in the field until evening. Then she beat out what she had gleaned, and it was about an ephah of barley. And she took it up and went into the city. Her mother-in-law saw what she had gleaned. She also brought out and gave her what food she had left over after being satisfied. And her mother-in-law said to her, "Where did you glean today? Where have you worked? Blessed be the man who took notice of you." So she told her mother-in-law with whom she had worked and said, "The man's name with whom I work today is Boaz." And Naomi said to her daughter-in-law, "May he be blessed by the Lord, whose kindness has not forsaken the living or the dead." Naomi also said to her, "The man is a close relative of ours, one of our redeemers." And Ruth the Moabite said, "Besides, he said to me, 'You shall keep close by my young men until they have finished all my harvest.'" And Naomi said to Ruth, her daughter-in-law, "It is good, my daughter, that you go out with this young, with his young women, lest in another field you be assaulted." So she kept close to the young women of Boaz, gleaning until the end of the barley and wheat harvests, and she lived with her mother-in-law. Well, it will be helpful to have chapter 2 of Ruth open in front of you. But before then, I wonder if you remember the Brownlee brothers. At the final race of the 2016 World Triathlon Series in Mexico, Johnny Brownlee, who was comfortably leading the race into the final kilometre of this 10-kilometre race, he started to suffer from heat exhaustion, and he started weaving all over the place, and he appeared to be on the verge of collapse. Well, his brother Alistair, who was in second place, helped him over the line. Alistair effectively gave up his chance of winning this world-level race to assist his brother, when he finally pushed him across the line and came in third himself. So how far would you go to show kindness to another? I've known many of you for the last 5 years, And I know that there is a lot of kindness and generosity in this room. But how far does it go? How much would you be willing to give up to be kind? Could you give up winning a world-level sporting event? How much of your time are you willing to give up? Would you be willing to let someone live in the spare room in your house in the long term? Well, you might well say, well, this was fine. It was his brother. He loved him. So maybe the question then is, who would you extend your kindness and generosity to? Does it just extend to people in this room? What about a friend, a relative, a stranger, a homeless man, the annoying person in your office? Or maybe the relative you cannot stand and have been at odds with for years. How much kindness and generosity would you be willing to give these people? We're talking about this because chapter 2 of Ruth is all about kindness. It's all about the loving kindness of God. And so last week, the writer set the scene. Naomi's husband left Bethlehem because of a famine. And yet, of all the places he could choose to go and live, he chose to live in an enemy state. Well, tragically, he died. And then 10 years later, continuing this tragedy, both of Naomi's sons die, leaving behind three widows, Naomi and her two daughters-in-law, Moabites. And Naomi didn't see a good life for them. If they returned with her to Bethlehem, this wasn't much for them. And so she managed to persuade Orpah, one of her daughters-in-law, to go home to her family. But Ruth, surprisingly, clung to Naomi and vowed to stick with her and her God, despite seeing no prospects for her in Bethlehem. And so these two widows arrive in Bethlehem, Naomi feeling like she has nothing and that God is just against her. And Ruth, arriving in this alien place as a stranger, an outsider, she comes here simply because she has come to trust the God of Israel. Well, at the end of chapter 1, we see it is the barley harvest, which actually happens in spring. And this is around the time of Passover, which is the celebration of when God brought Israel out of a foreign nation, out of slavery, to their home. It seems like the time is ripe to see how Naomi's perspective is wrong. And so part 2 of the story begins the journey of Naomi's journey from bitterness to blessing. And so we're going to see the beginning of that today. And we're going to see three things as we go through chapter 2. We're going to see loving kindness in God's providence. We're going to see loving kindness in godliness. And then we're going to look for the source of that loving kindness. So let's start by looking at loving kindness in providence in verses 1 to 4. And so in verse 1, right away, the last important character of this story is introduced to us. There is a man. He is a relative of Naomi. And the significance of this will become clear at the end of the chapter. And he is a worthy man. This man is Boaz. But this is all the writer says. The writer set this up to anticipate the entrance of the potential hero of this story. Well, we learn no more. And it cuts straight back to Naomi and Ruth, who are having a conversation in the morning. And they are totally unaware of Boaz. And their situation is they are destitute with no one to provide. And so Ruth suggests that she goes and gleans in the fields. The harvest is happening. And so her intention is just to follow behind those who are harvesting, the reapers, and gather whatever remains. Naomi doesn't really say a lot. She simply says, go. What's surprising is that, well, Naomi isn't actually that old. She's probably in her 50s. I mean, it leaves you wondering why she doesn't go out. Now, it doesn't say, but if I was to guess, it seems that she is still caught up in her suffering. I mean, maybe she's spending all her energy just worrying so that she has none left to take the initiative and look and see what she could do to help them survive. But in contrast, Ruth gets up and she goes. I mean, and notice that she just intends to go to whichever field she'll be allowed to glean in. She's not seeking a specific one. And so when she goes out, it is all the more striking when we read what happens. Did you see in verse 3, it says, she happened to come to the part of the field belonging to Boaz. Now, more literally in the Hebrew, it just says, she chanced. The writer is totally aware that God is sovereign, and he's using this literary device to communicate a tone of, it just so happened she arrived in Boaz's field. What a coincidence! I mean, we saw last week how God is working absolutely all things. He's working all things for good according to his plan. And here we see that in action. I mean, God is really the unmentioned true hero of this book. I mean, his actions are never directly mentioned, but they are hinted at, and these few verses at the beginning of chapter 2 are probably where it's clearest. You see, from the perspective of Naomi and Ruth, it just seems like chance. But the writer is looking back, and in hindsight, he can just see clearly how God was working. And I'm sure you have all had experiences like that. I mean, some of you might know that I spent a year working as a researcher in Texas. And to be honest, I really wanted to go to Berkeley in San Francisco. And that was the hope, the plan, but it just didn't work out. And so I ended up being placed in Texas. And I was, to be quite frank, disappointed. I had no interest in Texas or country music or cowboys. I just wasn't particularly excited about going. But as I look back and I just see how this year turned out to be one of the most significant years of my life. God used it to mature and transform my faith, and it changed the direction of my life. It's the year that's kind of set me on the course to me standing here preaching now, choosing to be in ministry. I look back and I see that God's hand was at work in sending me to Texas rather than Berkeley. Well, Ruth doesn't just come to Boaz's field, but it just so happens that Boaz decides to come and pay the reapers a visit. I mean, you can just see how the writer is laying it on thick here, and he says, and behold, Boaz came. I mean, the coincidences are just stacking up here. God is clearly at work. And don't forget that he is at work in all things. And so we see that God is showing loving kindness here in his providence as we see what happens with Boaz and Ruth and how this story ends. And so let's spend some time taking a look at our two main characters, those that he's using for his good plan, Ruth and Boaz. And we're going to look at their loving kindness in action in verses 5 to 16. Now, remember last week that saying that this is a time when the judges ruled, a time when Israel constantly turned away from God. And yet here is Boaz. The writer has told us he is a worthy man. But now he clearly wants us to know that he is a godly man, someone whose life is centered around God. I mean, did you see how he greeted the reapers in verse 4? I mean, there is no reason that the writer would have included such an innocuous detail, such as this greeting, unless he wanted to show us something. He wanted to show us here that this man is a godly man, and he greets them saying, "The Lord bless you." And next, as we continue on down in this chapter, we see Ruth's character. We've already seen that she takes the initiative. She's going out. Naomi hasn't requested it, but Ruth takes the initiative to care for her mother-in-law. And then we also see her humility. She asked, even though all she wanted to do was gather up leftovers that are just left behind in the field. And in the conversation that follows, you might notice that she refers to herself as a foreigner, and she considers herself less than Boaz's servants. She doesn't try to claim that she is anything more. And lastly, we see that she is a hard worker. I mean, did you see that she worked constantly from early morning to the time when Boaz arrives with just a short rest? I mean, gleaning is not easy work, to be gathering up all these things and carrying them in the hot sun. I mean, she appears here to match up very well with the woman of noble character in Proverbs 31. But then now we get to the center of the chapter. And you might have noticed that this chapter is simply a series of conversations. But there are a series of conversations that mirror each other. So on the outside, you have Ruth talking to Naomi. But then inside of them, you have Boaz talking to the reapers. And then in the middle, you have this one conversation between Boaz and Ruth. And this is what the writer wants us to hear, this conversation in the middle. And in this conversation, we should be absolutely overwhelmed by the kindness of Boaz. I mean, firstly, notice the language he uses. In contrast to Ruth, who distances herself by referring to herself as a foreigner, Boaz calls her my daughter in verse 8. And then notice his generosity. I mean, he could simply have said, yes, you can glean at the edges of my field and whatever is left over. But no, he says more than that. He tells her to keep close to his women who are gleaning. He tells his men to not touch her. And remember, she is an outsider, a foreigner, from a people who they were fairly recently at war with. And Israel is not particularly godly or faithful at this time. So Ruth would have every reason to fear. I mean, even at the end, Naomi says you would just stay there so you don't get assaulted in other fields. But Boaz reassures her and takes measures so she is safe. And then again, he even encourages her to drink the water that his men are drawing from the well as they take rest and they want to be refreshed. And these are all things he does not have to do. And then you see that despite their difference in standing, him a wealthy landowner, her a destitute widow from another country, he invites her to eat with him, share in the wine, gives her roasted grain. This man has no sense of self-importance. He is a humble and godly man. And it doesn't stop there. It just keeps going and going. Did you see how his generosity overflows in verses 15 and 16? He tells them to purposely leave stuff behind. He is sacrificing from his crop. He's sacrificing from his livelihood to be kind to her. In Leviticus 19, it says, in the law, this is the law of God here that Boaz knows, it says, when you reap the harvest of your land, you shall not reap your fields right up to its edge, neither shall you gather the gleanings after your harvest. And you shall not strip your vineyard bare, neither shall you gather the fallen grapes of your vineyard. You shall leave them for the poor and for the sojourner. I am the Lord your God. So you see, Boaz, yes, he was required by law to let Ruth glean. He was required to leave the field, the edges of his fields unharvested so that the poor, the needy in the town are able to come and provide for themselves. You know, it is a system that God has put in place in the law of Israel to provide for the needy in a nation that doesn't have benefits, it doesn't have insurance and all these things, but the law has things in place to provide. I mean, it is still hard work to glean, but it does provide for those in need. Yet Boaz completely goes beyond the law. I mean, his godliness goes beyond obedience, because it seems that he understands the spirit of the law, and he understands why that law is there. And so he is kind and generous to Ruth. And you're not really surprised in verse 10 when Ruth asks, why? Why have I found favor in your eyes? Well, in his response at first, it seems like, well, it's just simply because Naomi is a relative of his, and Ruth has been very kind to her and looked after her in a sacrificial way. But actually, the reason's different. In verse 12, Boaz says, the Lord repay you for what you have done, and a full reward be given you by the Lord, the God of Israel, under whose wings you have come to take refuge. Why has she found favor? Not because of her industriousness or love, but simply because she sought refuge under the Lord's wings. She sought refuge in the God of Israel. Boaz's kindness is not conditional. It's not dependent upon the love that she has shown to Naomi. It is simply grace, pure grace. Now, we could stop here and just simply say that Ruth and Boaz, they are amazing examples of godly character, of humility, of kindness, of generosity and grace in a time where that was just rare, and that we should all seek to be like them. And that would absolutely be a good thing for us all to try and do. But why? Why should we try to be godly and have character like Boaz and Ruth? Well, turn with me for a moment to Deuteronomy 24, and we're going to look for the source of this loving kindness and why we should have a loving kindness like Boaz and Ruth. And I will tell you the page when I get there. It is on page 166. And starting in verse 19 of Deuteronomy 24. When you reap your harvest in your field, and forget a sheaf in the field, you shall not go back to get it. It shall be for the sojourner, the fatherless, and the widow, that the Lord your God may bless you in all the work of your hands. When you beat your olive trees, you shall not go over them again. It shall be for the sojourner, the fatherless, and the widow. When you gather the grapes of your vineyard, you shall not strip it afterwards. It shall be for the sojourner, the fatherless, and the widow. You shall remember that you were a slave in the land of Egypt. Therefore, I command you to do this. The reason why these laws are there, why this law is there, is because, not simply because God has commanded it, but because God has saved them out of slavery in Egypt. This law is a reminder to them of what God has done. It reflects the character of God in their actions, reminding each other and showing God's character to outsiders. I mean, Israelite landowners who left gleanings for the poor and the needy and outsiders, they are tangibly demonstrating an understanding of what the Lord has done for his people. I mean, Boaz's kindness here is a reflection of the Lord's loving kindness that has been shown to him. In the same way, we have all been saved out of slavery, slavery to sin. I mean, we couldn't save ourselves, and so Jesus came to free us and lead us out of slavery back to our God. I mean, that is amazing loving kindness, but it goes even further than that, far further than the Exodus. God actually saved us while we were still his enemies, while we were still actively rebelling against him. Romans 5 says, while we were still sinners, Christ died for us. He went so far to die for us whilst we were against him, his enemy. I mean, just think for a moment how much loving kindness the Lord has shown you then. You were incapable of saving yourself. How much you might have struggled to change yourself, or if you even tried to change. And yet, he saved us, his enemies, those who, until he saved us, we hated him. And this is why we should try to have the loving kindness that Boaz has, because the Lord has shown so, so much loving kindness to us. But there is a second reason as we come to the end of this chapter in Ruth. So if we look back to Ruth chapter 2, verses 17 to 23, if you've lost the page, it is 2:23. And so we see that Ruth spends the day gleaning, and she comes home with this amazing amount of barley. An ephah is about 22 litres. I mean, you can imagine carrying 22 litres of barley. That's going to be pretty heavy. But if she is getting this every day of the harvest, and from what Boaz was saying, it sounds like she might get more in the future days because they're purposely leaving it behind. Well, the amount that she's bringing home is in the realms of what they would need to live for a whole year. I mean, that is just an astonishing amount. Just imagine Naomi's face, who she left because of a famine. She came back, she's got no means to provide. Just imagine her face when she sees Ruth hauling this sack of barley home. And now read where it says, "Where did you glean today? Where have you worked? Blessed be the man who took notice of you." And so Ruth tells her. And she says, "May he be blessed by the Lord, whose kindness has not forsaken the living or the dead." Now, whose kindness is a little ambiguous in the English. I mean, is it Boaz's kindness that she's saying has not forsaken the living or the dead? Or is it the Lord's kindness? Well, it's much clearer in the Hebrew. And it's very clear that it's the Lord's kindness that Naomi says has not forsaken her. And this is a far cry from her arrival in Bethlehem, we saw in chapter 1 last week, where she declares, "The Lord has dealt bitterly with me. So don't call me Naomi, which means pleasant, but call me Mara, which means bitter." But now, here, she is seeing that the Lord has used Boaz to be kind to her. That Boaz's loving kindness is providentially the loving kindness of the Lord. And so they've come back, and she thought they were going to struggle to live, and Ruth comes back with this great harvest. And now the Lord has used Boaz to provide a rich harvest for her and Ruth. And just notice how this is changing her outlook. It's kind of lifting up her eyes, her gaze is lifted, and she is aware of what is around her again. I mean, in the next sentence, she tells Ruth that Boaz is not only a close relative, but a redeemer. Now, this is another little bit of lore we've got to get into, but a redeemer in Israel was expected to not just care for the widows of a brother or a close relative, but if able, a redeemer was expected to marry his brother's widow. I mean, this law was just there as another example of how God provides for the needy, another example of his loving kindness, that this redeemer would be able to marry the widow and provide for them and support them. And back in chapter 1, Naomi had seemingly forgotten that Boaz existed. I mean, she was just, eyes were down, she was just stuck in her suffering, her bitterness. But now she sees hope. And as she says this, I don't think she's scheming. But having heard how Boaz treated Ruth, how Boaz cared for her and was kind to her, I think Naomi is just wondering if he might act as a redeemer to Ruth. And this would solve the second problem that they came back to Bethlehem with, where they had no husbands to provide for them in what is a male-dominated world. And so Naomi agrees with Boaz that Ruth should stick to Boaz's field and to Boaz's servants. And here what we see is how the Lord's providence and human actions intertwine. I mean, Boaz's loving kindness is absolutely real. But in God's providence, it is also God's loving kindness to Naomi and Ruth. I mean, Boaz is the means, the instrument through which God is showing his loving kindness to Ruth and Naomi. And this is the second reason why we should aspire to have and show loving kindness like Boaz. Because we are, all of us in this room, we are one of the primary ways that God shows kindness to people. I mean, we are often the means that God uses to be generous to someone, to provide, to care for someone, to comfort, to show love. And Boaz knew this. If you go all the way back to verse 12, you see in his answer to why she has found favor, he says, "The Lord repay you." He's not saying, "You've sought refuge in the Lord, and so now I'm going to repay you for that." No, he says, "The Lord repay you." Even though he is the one that is doing all these good things for her, he absolutely sees that it is the Lord that is repaying her. And so not only have we received more loving kindness than we can ever give, we are so often used as God's instruments of kindness to those around us. So I challenge you all, and myself included, how can you show more loving kindness this week? Not just being better with those you are already kind to, but consider who could you be an instrument of kindness to? God was concerned with the fatherless, the widow, and the alien. Does your kindness extend to those around you, to those who are less comfortable being around? Does it extend beyond your family, beyond this church? And we are naturally selfish. However much we deny it, we are naturally selfish, and it is hard to become more and more selfless and to care for others at times. And so please take time this week to consider and meditate on just how much kindness God has shown you in saving you. And consider what he's done in your life already. Because as the more we understand and get that, the more we are going to be able to show loving kindness to others and be the instruments that he uses in his providence.